I think we're going to go one phone on the trip.
Wow.
Yeah. I think because you don't need.
Are you
going
to do it
phones.
So that, like, if we use the phone, we both have to be there to use the phone? Because otherwise, like, Julie's just going to be like using the phone, like, when she's by herself. She's going to be like, I'm going to go take a walk with the phone. Good luck.
Well, you know what? If she does, then I am off the phone.
That's good. So no, that's true. Yeah.
So it'd be just the idea, like, I mean, we'll see what happens, you know?
But relationships are all about keeping score.
That's true. That's true. And I'm going to fucking win.
I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm Max Fisher.
So we skipped talking about the news last week because my conversation with Eitan Hersh about political hobbyism went long. By the way, you should go check it out if you
really
haven't.
Really interesting. Really cool.
So this week, we're going to cover a few stories that caught our eye and take some of your questions.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about whether the current iteration of AI is a bunch of junk or awesome. Because of an AI rapper named Glorb.
It's both, it turns out.
We're also going to take a look at a new study that suggests the only thing that's keeping us on social media is FOMO.
Boy, do I have some thoughts on this one.
I do, too. I figured you might. But first, the stock price of the Trump Media and Technology Group, the new holding company of Truth Social, is in free fall.
Yeah,
you hate to see it.
Man, I took a bath on this one, John. I went long on Trump Media, and I am dying.
Boy, are you regretting.
I'm going to have to step out and call my broker again.
So, after hitting a high of $79 a share on March 26th.
Which is nuts. That's too much.
It's too much for not a real company, right? The company's stock has plunged by more than 50%, slashing the worth of Trump's stake by more than $3 billion in less than 2 weeks, and knocking the former president out of Bloomberg's list of 500 wealthiest people. What's he going to do now?
Start another media company, probably.
The stock's initial inflated value, $6.7 billion for a company that reported revenue of just $4.1 million.
Against $52 million in losses.
That has prompted what I'd say are apt comparisons to GameStop, AMC, and other recent meme stocks.
They're way too generous to Trump Media. GameStop is a company that produces goods and services.
You're
they have
not,
revenue.
You're not a consumer of Trump's truths? You don't think that, you look forward to?
Even if I were, that would not give them anything on their balance sheets, which it turns out do not exist.
Because those truths are free. The posts are still free.
Information wants
like
to be
the
free,
tweets.
John.
Max, you covered this on How We Got Here this week. Is this just a new frontier in the MAGA grifting economy? That's what it seems like.
So I think it is an attempted new frontier in the grifting economy, but it is following, importantly, the tech grifting economy, which is the greatest grifting economy many of us have ever seen. So, like, my big takeaway from digging into, like, how did this company come to be valued at $7 billion is that the stock market is fake and money is fake and all of these valuations are just, like, it's whatever people say they are worth.
Which
that
honestly makes it
worth.
The most perfect place for Donald Trump.
It's true, yeah. That's right. The king of invented imaginary value. Yeah. Because this is just like, it's not just that it's a bad company. Like, it's literally the value of the stock is not worth the paper that it is printed on. This is a company with no revenue, with no prospect of having
multiple
any
investigations, audits.
Right. They're, when they first went public, their auditor had to put out what's called a going concern notice, which means we, the auditor of this company, say that it's not a viable company. So it's like, how did this company everybody knew was dog shit? How did the stock market valued at $7 billion? Because a bunch of speculators were buying it. And that's like my initial concern. And like you heard me kind of freaking out about this when this happened is like all of the people who are forever have been buying whatever gold off of Fox News daytime ads are like, I need to go buy the Alex Jones hair pills.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they're going to buy Trump Media stock. And I was like, this is scary because the right wing grift economy has figured out how to like leverage the stock market and leverage all these Wall Street guys and the Wall Street economy to make even more money off of stealing from their supporters, basically.
Mm.
But the fact that, like...
Which is their business model and their political model.
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
It works no matter what.
Yeah, but the fact that they lost half of that value within, like, 2 weeks has made me calm down a little bit because it turns out if you get a bunch of those people to buy in at first right away, but then they don't keep buying, then that value drops immediately.
So you think this is sort of it? Like, that's not going to go back up?
So
I was wondering if it's going to rise and fall based on Trump's political standing and like if he's doing well and he jumps ahead 5 points in the polls, then
right.
It goes up. And then if God forbid he wins in November, then it becomes a slush fund for influence, right? Then foreign governments are pouring money in there, corporations that are looking for something out of the White House.
Well, that was what I listened to all these interviews with, like, Wall Street insiders to be like, who the hell is buying this stock thinking it was just going to be, like, Fox News people who want to be like, I support the president, so I'm going to, like, buy stock in his dog shit company.
Right.
But they were saying
also
that,
also the Saudis.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, is that, like, if he becomes president again, God forbid, then, like, obviously the Saudis and the Kuwaitis will just give a bunch of money to this company or do a bunch 100%. Of business with it, like, buy out a $100 billion Truth Social contract to build Nome, their, like, giant castle in the desert. So if you are a, like, ruthless investor with no morals, I'm sorry, if you are an investor is what I meant to say, then if it looks like he's going to become president, then, like, why would you not get in on this? Because the value of the stock is going to go up if it's just going to become a grift machine, which is horrible and disturbing. But it seems like that's not happening yet, at least.
And it does seem like this is all, aside from all the investigations into a whole bunch of other chicanery around this company, the idea that you can have this sort of grifting setup with a fake company is legal, right?
I mean, sure. There are all of these, like, right-wing companies. There's, like, Public Square, which is a, like, right-wing Amazon clone. There's, like, Rumble, the right-wing YouTube clone. And they go public, and the idea is, like, own the libs by buying a share in our company. That will drive up the value, and then the shareholders can sell and make all this money. But it has never worked.
Right.
Because that is actually, you need sustained business on the stock in order for someone like Donald Trump to get his money out.
You need the Ponzi scheme to keep going.
Exactly. Right. And this is what Silicon Valley has always been so good at, is they figure out ways to keep selling it to the next person.
I think it was a Bloomberg story about this, a comparison that it's like a Trump coin. Isn't it more like a Bitcoin?
It's a lot like a Trump coin, right. And it's in the fact that the Trump stock, much like a Bitcoin, has no inherent value.
Right.
Because it is not tied to an asset that is worth anything.
Right, and it's just pure speculation.
It's pure speculation. It's pure, like, projection
fandom.
Of identity. Right. Like, people make this comparison to GameStop, which was the first big meme stock in 2021. But GameStop, like, is a real company. And people had a legitimate, like, investor-based reason to want to drive up that stock, which was that they thought that it was undervalued, that all these Wall Street firms were, like, heavily shorting it, and that actually it was going to turn its business around. And they were right, and it did. And this is, like, really, truly just, like you're saying, it's Bitcoin. It's just purely speculative. But because there are all of these other market forces, you can short a stock. You can't short Bitcoin. There are a lot of pressures pushing it down, which is why the stock keeps dropping, because people keep buying shorts on it.
How many shares do you own?
Well, that's going to depend on how low it drops and then how high we think we're going to go up again.
Okay, well, we'll check back in on that. speaking of junk on the internet, it's been a minute since we checked in on the state of artificial intelligence. And after some initial hot takes from everyone on the internet about the future of AI.
Not from us, though.
Lukewarm
well
at best.
Yeah.
which is where the current era of AI seems to be right now.
It does feel like they've caught up with us.
Yeah.
It really does feel like that.
We were the pioneers. Just this week, the Financial Times published a piece about the rise of AI skepticism. Ian Bogost, who's been a guest on Offline, wrote a great piece in The Atlantic titled AI Has Lost Its Magic. And neuroscientist Eric Hole published an op-ed at The New York Times titled AI-Generated Garbage is Polluting Our Culture. Is it ever? We've certainly talked about some of that junk here, like when you tried to buy all that cookware from Selena Gomez and it did not work out for you.
No, they sent me a shipping update. It's coming.
It's coming. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. That's good to know.
With the Snoop Dogg, whatever thing that I bought. I don't even remember what the Snoop Dogg scam was.
I don't either. We've also talked about some of the ways that AI could be transformative, frighteningly so.
Sure.
So what do you think here? Give me a read on the state of AI right
so
now.
So I do not think that it is, like, all going to be garbage, but I think that we, and certainly I, like, really underestimated how much we were going to be just completely oversaturated with AI-produced junk.
Mm.
Just, like, this fire hose of shitty, cheap, obviously fake content. Like, every time you scroll a social media feed, especially on Facebook, which is really disturbing because I think it's like, you know, it's a lot of older people who are on there, maybe can't differentiate. You see a ton of shitty AI-generated images. Google results now. You just get pages and pages of AI-generated
pages.
Oh, yeah. It's full of, because you know, people have figured out that you put some prompts into ChatGPT, whatever, you generate a trillion web pages for $0, and then you try to, like, juice Google search results with it so that people click on it. You sell ads against that. Teachers talk about being flooded with AI papers. Mm. Like, I feel like every week you hear another story about, like, some high school teachers. Like, I told my students they could have a ChatGPT amnesty where they would not get in trouble if they admitted if they plagiarized their paper with ChatGPT.
Oh, really?
And, like, every hand goes up in the classroom. And there are all of these studies that, like, even academic, like, peer reviews, it turns out, like, they're a lot leaning on AI. And I just, like, I keep thinking about, do you know the Great Pacific Garbage Patch? Have you heard about this?
Oh. What is it? So, refresh my memory.
So garbage ends up in the ocean,
yes.
Right? There's like microplastics, whatever, junk. And because of the ocean currents, it all ends up in the same place in the middle of the Pacific. So there's this giant, it's this like continent made of garbage, three times the size of France in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And I feel like that's what I'm swimming in. I feel like I'm in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch of AI content.
I haven't encountered it as much. Like,
really?
I see the images pop up here and there, and you can tell it's an AI-generated image, and you can see the ChatGPT stuff a mile away. But I have not been exposed to it as much as I thought.
Maybe I'm just overly sensitive to it because it offends me on some basic level.
Oh, it's definitely offensive. I mean, my view on all of this is, like, of course there's going to be glitches. The FT article was all about how these like large language models keep having these glitches and problems.
Sure.
And they like freeze up.
Right.
And then there are some people who think that like this is going to like poison them, because then as they scrape the internet,
it
they scrape
fed
more.
Back into,
yeah, it gets
right.
fed back in. And it's
right.
just horrible.
Right.
So like that's obviously going to happen, especially at the beginning, and there's going to be failures.
Sure.
I also think it's like way too early. We thought this from the beginning that it's like way too early to conclude that the robots are taking over.
Sure. Right.
That the apocalypse is nigh.
Right.
But like I don't think you have to buy into the more apocalyptic, grandiose versions of mm-hmm. like what AI could be to think that it could like significantly reshape society.
Sure.
And
absolutely.
Like our friends at Hard Fork just did an episode about all the companies that are already using AI to do all or at least some of the jobs that humans do. So there's like
really?
Already
huh.
like AI-based layoffs
yeah.
that are happening. And of course, the companies aren't saying that it's because
right,
of AI.
Right,
but
right,
oh,
right,
so
right.
like, I think we are in the very early stages of this. And
of
it's
course.
Like way too early to draw conclusions.
Right.
But like one of the big themes in this show has been like the original promise of the internet and social media,
mm-hmm.
you know, connecting humanity together has not come to pass.
I wouldn't say. I feel more connected to alt-right trolls.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Instead, it's like mostly fueled our right. current hellscape.
Right.
But it's been somewhere in the middle. Like there have been good parts.
Sure,
there
of course.
Have been bad parts.
Of course.
And then
yeah.
there's been plenty of junk.
Right.
Right. That's
right.
been the story of the internet and social media.
Yeah.
It's possible that that could be the story of AI as well. Some really bad parts,
yeah.
some really helpful parts, and then just a lot of shit in the middle.
I think that's exactly right. And something that I keep trying to go back to as a kind of like starting point heuristic is that these companies are all just trying to make money. And they are all, I don't say that as a like, therefore they're evil and we
right.
hate the companies, although it doesn't create great incentives. But I think what that tells us is they are going to try to make money in the established ways that you can make money. Like this is why we saw these social media companies that created this technology that was so powerful, that can like really peer inside our minds, can deduce what our like impulses and instincts are and what will most please and outrage and satisfy us. And what they geared all that towards was selling ads, because that's where the market was. And where the market is for AI currently is consulting and outsourcing to businesses and advertising.
Mm,
and
that's a good point.
That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a terrible thing or going to be a great thing, but I think that I always try to remind myself there's a baseline assumption that they're selling like fancy Microsoft Word tools, Microsoft Office tools for office places, which is fine. But it's going to be a lot of stuff like what you talked about was on the Hard Fork episode of like replacing people who are doing kind of menial tasks. I will say that I have tried to use a lot of these AI chatbots to do blunt force research.
Mm-hmm.
Like this week we did a big episode on how we got here about student loans.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is perfect for AI.
I'm going to learn about student loans.
Well, I'm looking at all this stuff like, you know, I wanted to know like what was the average cost of college in the U.S. in 1958 in today's dollars
mm-hmm.
or like, what was the rate of change in student loans?
Seems like a
loans?
Perfect question for...
Right, yeah. It's just like digging into the... And it was garbage. Like, I mean, not even giving me like, oh, it turns out this data was off a little bit, but it, like, didn't understand the questions. It was pointing me in the wrong places. It was like all this work to try to get the right thing out of it. Now, I might just be a fucking moron who is using it incorrectly. Like, seriously, I would not rule out the possibility that you just have to be smarter about using it.
Yeah.
But the, like, amount of knowledge work that it was going to do has not borne out. But we know that it is good at spamming. And we know that spamming has a lot of commercial potential to it. So I think that no matter where AI goes, for better or worse, bigger or smaller, I think the spamming is going to be with us forever because it's successful at that. It's cheap to do and it makes money.
And I think because it's still like relatively early, mm-hmm. that it could very well improve by leaps and bounds.
For sure.
The LLMs, right? Yeah. The large language models. We just don't know yet. I also think it's very possible that both the best and worst consequences of AI have not even been conceived of yet.
What do you think? What are the kinds of things?
I don't even know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, we don't, when technology advances like this, mm-hmm. and especially advances this quickly, yeah. like, you start off thinking, oh, it's going to help this problem or it's going to cause this problem, right? And then just right. something that no one has thought of
yeah.
just could come to pass.
It is always a big, like, even when social media was first becoming really big in the like early 2010s, and it was like, oh, it's going to bring revolution or is it going to bring chaos? I did not at least foresee, and the people I was talking to did not foresee, that actually its big effect was going to be magnifying certain innate tendencies that we had in us as individuals and as societies. It was going to be kind of pulling us in certain directions. And that was when
we were going to break our brains.
And in the very like specific, consistent way that, and like looking back, the evidence was there. Like you can go back and be like, oh, this is what the news feed did, and you can like trace ahead. But you're right. It is very hard to see where it's going to go when the technology is this powerful and is this kind of everywhere in our day-to-day lives.
I do worry that it's going to, wherever it goes, amplify the problems of social media that we've already talked about by continuing to deepen the relationship between humans mm-hmm. and the illusion of connection with someone else that is now not going to be there. So a lot of more people just like lonely using their AI bots to help them work and not like communicating and having relationships with other people. Right. But it's all like that part worries me.
Yes.
The misinformation problem, obviously we've talked about like every problem that exists with social media, I feel like could be magnified by the advance of AI.
That's a good point. And I often, it's making me think of when I'm often talking to people about who were skeptical of the idea that social media could be bad for you. Something I try to emphasize is that, like, you log onto your platform, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, and you think that you were using this app to experience a relationship with people on the other side of it. But in fact, what you are having is a relationship with a social media algorithm mm-hmm. that is using real people as like sock puppets to say what it wants to say or to show you the kinds of content that it wants to show you. So to some extent, we already live in a world where we all have relationships with these powerful AIs that are manipulating us to try to get us to do certain things. So
yeah,
the idea of what is the LLM-driven social network, I don't know. I mean, when Sora-style models start mass-producing videos for a TikTok-like platform, what is that going to be like?
Yeah. Offline is brought to you by Helix. Shopping for a new mattress? The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including their award-winning Lux and Ultra Premium Elite collections. Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts. Like my son Charlie, although he's not really a sleep expert, which he would be. So how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix sleep quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. Not only will the mattress be the best you've ever slept on, but the setup is fast and easy. Helix mattresses are delivered in a box and straight to your door for free. These mattresses are great. They're super comfortable. We all have them.
Huge
all
fan.
Used them. We've all slept in them.
Don Lux. That's what I got.
There you go. You take the quiz. Get mattress just for you. You don't want a mattress for someone else. You want
it
for you.
I want it for you.
Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/offline. That's helixsleep.com/offline. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Last week, NBC News published a piece about Glorb.
Oh my God, I'm excited about this.
An artist that has been remixing popular rap songs with AI versions of SpongeBob SquarePants characters. Who cares, you may ask? Well, Glorb
the
has
youth.
Glorb has millions of streams on Spotify, TikTok, and YouTube. 500,000 followers on YouTube alone. To sum it up in a tweet from Amular93, quote, AI is trash, but I can't stop listening to that Glorb question mark SpongeBob song on TikTok. Austin, can we play the Glorb?
Wow, heads are bopping in the studio.
Kind of a banger.
Do you like it?
No, I don't like it. But you have to understand, I drive my child to school twice a week now, and I'm forced to listen to the Hot Wheels Let's Race theme song, Peppa Pig, and Octonauts on repeat, right? That's what I listen to.
Yeah, I listened to it, and I was like, oh, I'm old. That's what's happening
it's
here.
An earworm.
That's what I'm hearing.
This is what you listen to at a club with bottle service. We were talking about bottle service before the show started.
That's what we talk about usually before the show
that's
starts.
That's our warm-up.
Bottle service clubs. Yeah, that's right.
That's what... This is wild. Now, you can see the iteration of this where... Again, mass producing crap and mass produced crap.
Sure.
Traditionally, historically, very popular in America. That's all I'm saying.
So, okay. First off, can I read a line from you from this article that I really enjoyed? Quote, Glorb, who declined to be interviewed, isn't publicly affiliated with Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon's like...
Yeah, they were happy. They were happy that Glorb, who declined to be interviewed...
I wonder if Nickelodeon's going to send a cease and desist to Glorb.
I think Nickelodeon probably loves it.
Yeah,
come
that's
on, reaching
right.
out. So, okay. Glorb was not... to my taste. This is not my music.
That's not what you listen to.
But no. I think it's cool. I think it's really cool that this is happening, that someone is finding a creative way to use AI to do something that you wouldn't anticipate. They're using it as like a tool. Like, it really reminds me of the first days of synths and drum machines when like everyone was really afraid that like, oh, this sounds like a bad piano or a bad drum. People are going to use this to replace drummers, replace piano players, and music is just going to suck now. It's going to sound like this shitty drum machine. But in fact, what happened was that like creative people figured out how to use it to do things and create kinds of music that you could not do before. And that's how we got like Kraftwerk.
Yeah. No, this is going to be, I think the tool is the right word. Right, yeah. Like, and in the right hands, it can enhance creativity, and you can have silly things like Glorb. But I would bet that this use of AI is probably going to produce some good stuff.
I think we're going to see a lot of really cool stuff with AI in music, partly because we've talked about this before. The music industry is really embracing it. Like, they're really trying to work out the rights question with like how to use people's voices.
That's the big challenge, right?
Sure.
Like in all this stuff, right, there's like there's pros and cons, and the con that they're going to have to overcome here is the copyright, the voices, the, all that kind of stuff.
Right. But I think part of what makes me optimistic about it is that the like uncanny valley-ness of AI. Like, if you try to make an AI movie and the script sounds like it was written by ChatGPT, it would suck. If the visuals look like they were made by Sora, it would suck. But with music, you're okay with the fact that it sounds weird or artificial, and that can actually be cool and can add to it. So I think this is where a lot of the like really exciting work with AI is going to take place.
Right, listening to Glorb on the way home.
Banging that Glorb.
In other news, this is some surprising news. A recent study published in the National Bureau of Economic Research by Leonardo Burstyn, Benjamin Handel, Rafael Jimenez, and Christopher Roth has confirmed that nobody actually likes being on social media.
I sure don't.
I know of one podcast that could tell you that.
You don't need a study.
Fancy study. Your highfalutin study.
Give us the grant.
This one has some interesting findings. 53% of Instagram users would prefer to live in a world where the platform does not exist. Over 90% of iPhone users would prefer to live in a world where a new iPhone was released every other year.
That was wild.
And that 79% of Instagram users cite FOMO as their main motive for social media consumption.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the study? Is FOMO the only reason any of us are still on social media?
So I think let's get into the FOMO thing, because I think they a little bit misstate. When they use FOMO, I think they're a little bit misusing that word. I thought what was really valuable about this study is we have had studies before that show that people want to be off of social media but have a hard time making themselves do it. And whenever some social science experiment comes along, gives them excuse to do it.
Yeah.
They are much happier. Their life satisfaction goes up. They love it. They want to stay off forever. A lot of times they will stay off for a really long time. I think the contribution of this study is that it shows us that people don't just want to be off social media themselves. They want everybody else to be off of social media because we all increasingly understand social media as something that we are collectively obligated to. We feel it as a collective social obligation. So we kind of know that social media addiction is not just an individual problem, but it is a problem that as long as society itself is on it, like I'm going to feel compelled, pressured, obligated to be on there.
I thought it was interesting how they did the survey. Mm-hmm. So they asked all these students, like, would you prefer that we keep everyone's social media usage as they are, or do you prefer that we actually went ahead and deactivated the accounts of your classmates and yourself for 4 weeks? And if so, how much are you willing to pay for us to implement this collective deactivation?
Mm-hmm.
So the same students that that you would have to pay mm-hmm. for them to quit social media alone, they asked that question, and mm-hmm. they said, oh, you'd have to pay us.
Right.
They were willing to pay them
right. And they said,
to remove social media from their network.
Right.
So that, and it's switched that fast.
It's amazing that not only are these services free, which is what they're worth to us, but we would actually pay money to be off of them. That is how much we hate social media.
But not if it was just us.
That's right. Right. Because
then you have to pay up. Isn't that funny? If it's just you as an individual. So it is. Right. I mean, it is FOMO. I mean, it's not the traditional use of FOMO, but it is a. It's this obligation, like you
right.
said.
Right. Yeah. I think when they use it in kind of a tongue in cheek way, and I think what they really mean is this sense that like. That's where society is. Like, that's where our friends are. That's where our family is. So we feel like we have to be there as well. Or we feel like it's normative, like it's expected of us. Like, it really made me think about how I think important it is to set norms with kids now who are in school about not being on social media, not being on your phone. And again, like, you read all of these anecdotes. I, like, cannot get enough of these stories about, like, some school in Texas made everyone give their phone up. And the kids are all like, hallelujah, this is amazing. They love it because it has to be that collective shift. You just tell one kid, put away your phone, then they're just missing out. They feel this sense of loss.
First thing that popped into my head when I read this was the TikTok ban. The potential TikTok ban.
Yes.
And obviously there's a lot of people like, do not take my, you know, that we talked about this, right? They're calling in Congress. But if it was done, if it just happened, I wonder, like, it's tough to even look at polls for this right now. Because I think asking the question now versus, okay, you wake up tomorrow and there's no TikTok, mm-hmm. how does everyone feel? Or there's no Twitter or there's no Facebook?
Well, that was, I thought, a really, like, pretty funny finding from this study because they conducted it while all this TikTok ban stuff was happening. If you ask people on Instagram, would we be better off if everyone was off of Instagram? Everybody said yes, absolutely. And with TikTok, suddenly there's a big drop among people who use TikTok.
Yeah.
And I think that's because it's been made very real for them. It's very salient. It's not just a hypothetical. And also, that means that you picture it now. It's like Uncle Joe is taking my TikTok away rather than like we as a society are agreeing to give it up, which, you know, I think is relevant for whether a ban happens or how it happens. But it did make me think, it made me feel slightly differently about the TikTok ban.
Me too. Even though
I still don't think it's a good idea, it did make me think like probably if everyone felt bought into that instead of it being forced on them, I think we would like it a lot more.
Right. And if everyone took the leap, right? And if it's like a...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
It also shows like, this is what governments are for, actually, because sometimes...
Right. Well, that's the other...
Not to be all nanny state, but it's like, yeah, sometimes you don't know what is good for yourself.
Well, that is the other thing with the example of schools. It's like the schools that have tried this is like, just take away everybody's phones or just say, don't have a phone for 8 hours during the day. Like, does the nanny state, does the like effectively TikTok ban on a micro scale, not only does it work, but everybody is happier.
Right.
We kind of want that collective action.
Did everyone want speed limits? Right. Did everyone want to get pulled over when you're 10 miles over the speed limit? Probably not, but like, yeah, we're pretty happy they're there.
Right, yeah.
All right, in a second, we're going to answer some questions submitted by offline listeners and the Friends of the Pod Discord community. But first, we got some quick housekeeping.
Love to keep the house.
All right, if you're here in LA, Pod Save America will be live at the Festival of Books on April 21st. Hysteria's very own Aaron Ryan, Tommy, Dan, and me. We're going to have a great show. Grab your tickets at cricket.com/events. Also, it's all hands on deck this election year. We're even putting kids to work. Jesus. In a fun way. With merch.
I love it when they trick you into committing a felony on mic.
Pick up a brand new I Can't Vote But You Can onesie and toddler tees for all the kids in your life. Both my kids have one.
Okay.
Yeah. We have the t-shirt for Charlie. We have the onesie for Teddy.
I'm going to try to squeeze into it for swimsuit season.
You should.
get my beach bod.
There's no better reminder of what's at stake than a baby who might not be able to vote when they turn 18 because our country elected a lunatic obsessed with ketchup and fascism.
That's dark.
Again, didn't know where that sentence was ending.
Ketchup.
But there it is. Shop all Cricket Kids merch by heading to cricket.com/store to shop. And finally, Max?
Right, so we wanted to remind people to check out my new series with Aaron Ryan, How We Got Here, where every week we explore a big question behind the week's headlines, tell a story that answers that question. Our question this week, how did student loans go from something that most people agreed, as we once did, that they were a big net positive for students in the country, into a crisis dragging down the whole U.S. economy? Check out new episodes of How We Got Here every Saturday, John, on the What a Day podcast feed.
And as you all heard, this one is also brought to you by ChatGPT.
That's right.
All right, we'll be back with questions. So this week, our producer, Emma, asked the Friend of the Pod Discord for some questions. We got a lot of great responses, but of course, we only have so much time, so we're going to just answer a couple. Sidoni asked, will you ever consider doing another offline challenge, or are there any personal goals that y'all are trying to keep in order to not get to that
point? We're always at that point. I'm going to live the rest of my life at that point of needing an offline challenge.
Yes, that is me too. Not even joking. No, I'm back at 4 hours a day. I was just checking before
really?
We did this. Yeah,
I'm at like 2.5.
But
I don't have kids.
It's so election year, too. Yeah. It's just there's too much news.
What apps are you on?
I'm not on Twitter. It's just my drug of choice. Yeah. I know.
I've been spending more time on Instagram, which I don't feel good about. It's not healthy time, but I feel like that's where I'm going to de-stress rather than going to Twitter to stress scroll.
Can I just say?
Say
Instagram
it.
Is crap.
It's good. Well, this is why I'm seeing so much AI garbage.
It was just, well, I liked Instagram when it was like
your friends,
my friends and family. And that, and now it's just like, there's just feeding me so much shit I don't want.
This is the problem with every social network, is it becomes successful enough that everybody wants to use it because it's actually doing something useful and helping you connect with people. Then they have to get that fucking infinite growth. So they start shoving you in front of content.
Yep.
They start shoving content in front of you that you don't want, don't care about, but to keep you scrolling. Social media, it turns out it's bad.
It's bad. And I do think we should do another offline challenge to like refresh.
Are there any like particular challenges
you're considering? No, it's just that I mean, the good thing about the first one that we did is even though I'm back to 4 hours a day, like, in my mind, when I'm feeling frustrated at home and I'm like trying to parent and trying to do this, I'm like, wait a minute, am I just looking at my phone? Am I distracted by a couple different things? Maybe I should put it down. And sometimes it works.
I stop myself now all the time when I'm pulling my phone out of my pocket to look at it. Now I'm aware like, oh, I'm looking at my phone because I just had a thought that stressed me out.
Yes.
Not because I want to look at my phone. And that is really helpful.
I really try when I'm home to like put it in one place.
Where do you put it?
In my office at home.
Okay.
The challenge now is... We've implemented with Charlie, like, okay, we're going to go to bed now. Oh, well, I want to watch another show. I want to play 5 more minutes. And then we do a timer, 5 more minutes. So I have a timer on the phone. So I need the timer.
Oh, yeah.
I carry around the phone now as a timer to help parent my
Unfortunately,
child.
Unfortunately, there's no other way to measure time.
Someone give me a stopwatch.
Did they really?
No, I said, someone please get me a stopwatch.
you heard him, listeners.
I just realized now that would probably work. Yeah, I'll get a stopwatch.
It turns out the problem of telling time had actually been solved before the Apple Corporation came along.
It is. I just need, I do need to go back to the, and I got one of those phones, the light phones.
Yeah. My
brother and sister-in-law got me one for Christmas, and I just have not opened the box.
Yeah, that's right. Julia got one for Christmas, and it has been sitting like in the box in her desk ever since.
I should just do that. I should open it.
The amount of time that she and I have spent saying, you should open the light phone. You should try using. She's like, yeah, you should use the light phone. We should switch over to the light phone.
It's so hard. That's what addiction is. We're all addicted.
Well, it's a big step, and like, I feel like one of the things we learned last time is that permanent changes are really, really hard. Like, I did stay really on black and white for like a few months, and that did a ton for me. But I'm fucking back. I'm addicted to the color. I'm a junkie for color, and I like. Emma was showing me this new thing, iPhone assistive access, that some people are using as it's like kind of turns your iPhone into a light phone, but it sucks. It's not really designed for that. It's not very good at it. I think what I'm actually going to do is I'm taking a week off with Julie in a couple of weeks. I think I'm going to leave my phone and just use hers. I think we're going to go one phone on the trip.
Wow.
Yeah. I think because you don't need.
Are you going to do it
phones.
So that, like, if we use the phone, we both have to be there to use the phone? Because otherwise, like, Julie's just going to be, like, using the phone, like, when she's by herself. She's going to be like, I'm going to go take a walk with the phone. Good luck.
Well, you know what? If she does, then I am off the phone.
That's good. So no, that's true. Yeah.
So it'd be just the idea. Like, I mean, we'll see what happens, you know?
But relationships are all about keeping score.
That's true. That's true. And I'm going to fucking win. I am going to cream her.
But anyway, yeah, we should do it. We should do an offline challenge again. I'm for that.
I'm ready.
Alphonse asked, what are your personal online rabbit holes? I mean, you all know mine. It's Twitter.
Yeah.
Specifically, these days, it's election nerd Twitter.
Oh.
So, like, I have a list
are the,
of
are
like,
Nates fighting?
Election. You know, because my, like, of course, I'm also obsessed with the polls. Everyone knows that. True. But I'm not necessarily obsessed with, like, the horse race polls anymore.
Right.
But I'm big on, like, my nerdiness is, like, demographic change and the electorate. How that, like, I mean, big, like,
stuff
I've been
is
like that since college.
Yeah.
You know, that's what my thesis was about. So I, like, I go deep on that if I'm in a rabbit hole, which is very lame. YouTube videos.
Who's your preferred Nate?
My preferred Nate is Nate Cohn.
Yeah,
for sure. Nate.
Yeah. All the heads know.
Nate Silver is an example of someone who has become the caricature that people depicted of him.
He needs to log off.
At first, I was like, maybe it's unfair. Now I'm like, no. Now you've become that person. all right. YouTube videos of people assembling children's toys.
What's the best one? What makes for a really excellent
We just watch Hot Wheels all the time.
Okay.
Charlie's so into Hot Wheels. Although he's moving from Hot Wheels, thankfully, to Legos, because Legos are a little bit more creative.
Sure. It's probably more fun for you.
I spent a lot of my last weekend just building Legos.
Oh, yeah. I saw the one that you posted on Instagram.
I was very proud.
You know,
they're Octonauts, Octonauts Legos. Yeah.
Okay. I don't
Octonauts
know what
is a show on Netflix.
Got it.
It's a bunch of sea creatures. They talk about conservation. It's like some educational benefit to it. But he's really into Octonauts and the toys, so we're building that. And then my other rabbit hole is piano tutorials for pop songs. That's what I do on TikTok, to the extent that I go on TikTok.
Oh, okay. That's
which is not as much anymore.
Yeah, I would, when I was addicted to TikTok, I did have some, it was like cooking TikToks and stuff that was, I enjoyed it, and I told myself that it was useful. I was never doing any of these fucking recipes. I would bookmark them. I never made any one of them, but I was like, oh yeah, I'm learning a lot by watching the guy do another thing with cool Taiwanese noodles, whatever.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a good way to pass the time.
My worst rabbit hole that I don't do so much anymore, but I wanted to bring it up because I spent so much time on it, is somebody did a bad tweet. I better look at their profile and read all of their bad tweets and get mad about a tweet they did 3 months ago that was bad.
Don't we all do that?
That's what I mean. I think that's a, like, you know, it's the main character rabbit holing.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, that made me think of, we have this, as hopefully you all know, we have this show Terminally Online for Friends
Love
of
it.
Pod subscribers. And you're supposed to find something that makes you, that proves that you're, it's the opposite of this show.
Right.
I do both shows.
It's important to keep balance in the force.
And I had, like, last night, because I did it today, we did one today, and I was up for, like, an hour and a half, just deep dive scrolling through Twitter, and I was like, it's not a political thing that I'm looking for. So now I'm like in all different parts of Twitter, and you get into that point where you're like, you look for bad tweets and then crazy people, and it just takes you down a rabbit hole. You're like, ugh.
It's also, I feel like the algorithm is getting so effective at identifying those people. Now when I do this, I get like two scrolls deep and I'm like, oh, this person is actually like struggling with something that is coming out through bad tweets, and it doesn't feel good that they're getting dunked on for
this. Yes, I have come to that conclusion.
I have started looking for like good rabbit holes too, because I've just accepted I'm going to do
rabbit
social
holes.
Media rabbit holes. Yeah. I like started doing a lot of like letterbox dive rabbit holes.
Oh.
Like watch a movie over the weekend that I really like. So let me like read everything my friend said about it and then like click on this director and all of his other movies and what did my friends say about all those movies. And it's great because there's no outrage and there's a bottom.
I like doing that too, actually.
It's nice.
I don't get to watch good movies, television shows as much as I'd like to. But when I do and I really like one, I start doing the like, read the reviews, read what people are saying.
It's fun.
Like that is fun. Yeah. And it is very, it feels low stakes compared to everything else we do.
It feels low stakes, but you get that feeling of social because of people you know, whether it's people you follow or your friends' reviews. And
yeah.
It's nice.
That's
yeah.
nice. Okay. David Trowbridge asks, I live in a blood red part of Michigan, but because of work and life, I've built up a small amount of trust slash social capital, even though everyone around me is conservative. Good for you. Mm-hmm. How can I effectively use social media? Don't. No.
David.
Should I share political articles with my thoughts? Should I respond in the comments? What can I do that will actually help move votes to Biden in my critical home state?
David. Look, you know the answer to this, David.
And look, we're not saying this is like high and mighty here, because I'm on there posting too.
I'm
on there posting. I do think, I think the best thing to do here is go have some real conversations with people.
Right.
Get off social media.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to do it in person. You can use technology, have text conversations, email conversations.
Sure.
Again, this is what Eitan Hersh's book is all about. Mm-hmm. We talked about last week, Politics is for Power. Go check it out. But I would say if you're going to post, if you're going to post about politics, post every piece and comment as if you are talking to someone or at least trying to reach someone who might vote for Donald Trump or be okay if Trump wins and they didn't vote. And like really try seeing things from their perspective and showing some empathy, because if what you're trying to do is move votes, posting the piece that simply reaffirms your biases and priors or to show how right you are or like the pieces that are likely to get the most RTs and likes and whatever the fuck they're called these days.
Right.
Like, that's not going to move any votes in a red state. That's not going to move any voters. That's going to get, like, a lot of liberals who are already voting for Biden to be like, yeah, you're fucking right. But, like, if you're going to post, do it in a way where, and I still don't think it's going to work that much. I do think that in-person conversations are going to work or the conversations one-on-one. But that's how I would do it.
I have spent a lot of time thinking about specifically a like version of this problem where it was like, okay, I wrote this article on a very polarized subject like Israel-Palestine, and I want to post it in a way that will reach people who I think are polarized in the opposite direction of like, I want to persuade people who I think will disagree with the premise of this article, basically.
Yeah.
And where I came around is that after spending like years trying to like craft the right tweet that would pull them in and like sound like enticing but not too scary, is that it just can't be done. That I just like, you can write that tweet, you can do it, and there are like ways to frame things, but that the structure of social media is so polarizing. And there's like this, there's all of these studies that show that if you read the same sentence, literally the same sentence, however it's written, on a social media platform or in some other context, let's say an email, like say a news article, you see it on the social media platform, you immediately read it through an ultra polarized lens.
Wow.
And you either say, this affirms my identity, I agree with it, or this, you know, cuts against my identity and I disagree with it. And that does not apply to nearly the same extent on any other platform. So just, if you're going to use social media, use it to organize a bowling league and that's it. And then go meet people, seriously, and then go meet people in person.
Well, this is a great segue into the final question from Polly Seinerd, who asked, will John ever learn to not get in Twitter fights?
I love
the answer is absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I love that this came from Polly Seinerd because I like to imagine that this is part of like a political science paper. Like this is being rigorously studied. Is it possible for John Favreau to not get into Twitter fights? Okay. So John, let's hear your most cancelable take on the eclipse. Let's hear.
The thing is, I don't.
The eclipse needs to learn the value of organizing.
I know I've gotten in a few Twitter fights that have gotten a little out of hand recently.
No.
We've talked about. But here's what happened. I really don't. I have improved a lot since.
It's true.
2013, 2014, fresh out of the White House, finally got my own Twitter account, can say what I want.
It's time to
I went nuts, right?
Yeah.
I went nuts.
Yeah.
I have matured since then.
Mm-hmm.
But what gets me now, and from the last question that we were just talking about, like when I did that long thread about Ezra's piece or thought that Joe Biden should step down, like my thinking was, I don't necessarily agree with this. A lot of people are freaked out and might agree with Ezra.
Sure.
So I'm going to write the thread in such a way that empathizes with Ezra's argument and takes it at face value, but then tries to tell people what the downsides are.
Sure.
That did not work. People misunderstood what I was trying to say and they didn't get it. And,
I'm
like, and then that get me mad because it was social media. And so then I jumped in and was like, well, and I'm like, that's why it's bad. That's
but
why
it
it's
did
bad
but it did get you sending in like a voice memo for Ezra podcast, right?
Yes,
well, so like to like bring it back to your point about like social media for all of the bad, like all forms of technology also has good and bad. Like I just read this Time story like a week ago that I'm sure you saw this, that it was talking about Biden and Gaza, and it quoted you and Ben, and like from tweets that you had written that I thought were like, I totally agreed with and were really good. And I was like, I'm so glad this is in the fucking newspaper of record. And that would not have happened without Twitter. So there is some value to like throwing your sharp elbowed takes out there if you were a former presidential speechwriter.
That was a good lesson in, because this is also like, when you don't use Twitter as much anymore and you don't get in the Twitter fights, because right. I'm like, we have podcasts, right?
Right.
Ben and Tommy have made those criticisms of Joe Biden on almost every right. episode of Pod Save the World. Not only just on the episode, but if you don't listen to the episode, we clip key parts of the episode and then we put those on Twitter. But then like, I'm not the foreign policy expert, but I'm like, I feel very passionately about it right. now. I've educated right. myself on it, yeah. listen to Pod Save the World, read a lot about it. And I'm like, you know what? I feel strongly that yeah. I'm going to say something. Suddenly it's on like Playbook and the New York, and I'm like, yeah. oh, okay, well, there we go.
Sometimes,
now everyone's like, oh, Obama people are just jealous of Joe Biden. I was like, what the fuck?
I mean, sometimes there is value to having a platform that for all of the 99% of the ways that it's terrible, and I think that 99% is an accurate representation of how horrible Twitter is, it is still useful as a text-based platform where, for better or worse, everyone can issue press releases at a moment's notice, and sometimes that's good.
Well, and we've talked about this before, but it is still like an assignment desk for reporters.
That's true.
For a lot of reporters, yeah, especially yeah. political reporters.
Right.
And I sort of forgotten that over the years a mm-hmm. little bit because, you know, it's sort of fallen apart and there's a million other means of communication, stuff like that. But still, you put something on Twitter, right. that's what reporters are looking
at. There's such an irony that politics reporters who are as like phone addicted as ever, like, yes, you can see the like one-to-one pipeline from Twitter to the articles, but tech reporters,
yeah.
the early adopters, they're all off their phones.
Right.
They all have grayscale on their phones. yeah. You don't see tweets in their stories so much anymore, do you?
That's very interesting. Anyway, everyone unplug.
That's right.
That's our lesson
that's
for
what
today.
I'm doing.
All right, Max, that's our show for today.
And
we'll be back next week.
See you then.
Offline is a Crooked Media production. It's written and hosted by me, Jon Favreau, along with Max Fisher. It's produced by Austin Fisher. Emma Illick-Frank is our associate producer. Mixed and edited by Jordan Cantor. Audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Jordan Katz and Kenny Siegel take care of our music. Thanks to Ari Schwartz, Madeline Herringer, and Reed Cherlin for production support. And to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Delon Villanueva, who film and share our episodes as videos every week. The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it is important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis. On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic dive deep into current events like Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation's dystopian vision of the future, the rightward drift of former leftists, and RFK Jr.'s conspiracy theory-fueled presidential run. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with proven science as their ultimate guiding light. You might want to check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on leftists who turn right or speaking truth to goop. From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed against misinformation and resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.